Okay.
For the record, could we have those on the phone to identify themselves?
Okay, let me gavel the meeting and then we'll do that. Okay, I'm going to call the meeting of the Private Activity Bond Committee 2019 edition into order. As I asked, if everybody who's here in person would sign in, would those please people on the phone please identify themselves?
You have Chaz Cardall and Chris Reynolds from Orrick Herrington.
Good morning.
Morning.
And this is Lawrence Tonomura, Bank of America Merrill Lynch, San Francisco.
Hi, Lawrence.
Howdy.
Alan Abravanel from Perkins Coie.
Anyone else?
You John have Emerson Eileen from Hendricks Bank of America. And Lisa Middlestore from the Port of Morrow.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Teresa Ald from Home Forward.
John Emerson from Bank of America.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us today for we call it our big meeting, where we work on a carry forward as well as New Year allocations. I'd like to start by having Martha point us through a little bit about the history of our carry forwards, 15 through 17, then where we are in terms of current and carry forwards for 18, and then just the math calculation of what we have available in 19.
In 2015, carry forward allocations expired December 31st, 2018, with no balance. It was all used.
Yay. Good job.
2016 carry forward allocations will expire in December 31st, 2019, have a remaining balance of $144.7 million. 2017 carry forward expiring 2020 has $251.8 million. Remaining.
So at this point, the only folks who carry forward is Oregon Housing Community Services. Everybody else has used up their allocations. Good. Okay. Any questions, board members? So that turns us now to where we stand for 18.
2018 carry forward balance is $124,641,149.40.
Who just joined the call?
Good morning. This is Wes Allen from B of A Merrill Lynch. Apologize, I'm a couple minutes late.
Okay, so one of the first things we'll need to do is once we hear testimony is to determine as a committee how we want to allocate the balance of $124.6 million. And we have various folks who have applications and who will be talking about that. Would you just briefly then tell us about 2019 as well so we have a context of what's going to be available to the committee?
The IRS cap per capita times the Oregon population formula leaves the commit and then minus legislative allocations that have already been awarded, leaves the committee with $270,024,865 to award this year.
Great. And we didn't have a chance because we only heard about Port of Morrow's revised request yesterday or the day before. So on this page, we only show $120 million for Intel as a current year request, but actually Port of Morrow, and this is some paperwork that Martha has given you, they initially asked for carry forward of $40 million. They've reduced that to $10 million carry forward and $5 million is new allocations. So just to note, when we get ready to make allocation decisions, there is an additional $5 million being requested.
I put the whole $15 million on the carry-forward request.
Okay,
committee will deliberate.
Right, but I guess I had heard through via email perhaps there's a different way.
There was a suggestion.
Yeah. Okay, just to be aware of that. Okay, so we have a variety of different people who are going to come forth and talk about their requests for both carry-forward and new money and allocations. With the committee's approval, my suggestion would be to hear from everybody first before we make any decisions. And then we also, Home Forward, who's not necessarily ready to ask for a request, graciously agreed to come and tell us about later in the calendar year what their needs may be. They're really the only non-state agency that has come forward. So I thought we should just kind of hear from everybody before we make allocation decisions. So you all get to hear about everybody else's very important projects, too. So with that, the first of our requests is Port of Morro. And if you all may remember, 3-mile dairy digester project came and asked for $40 million in cap, which we gave them. It wasn't used during the calendar year, so it expired and is part of the $124.6 million that's now in carry forward land. So I don't know if you have anybody here in person or who's going to do the presentation, but I see Doug Gill coming forward, and I guess we also have people on the phone from Port of Morro.
Yeah, and this is Nathan Kennedy here with Equilibrium Capital representing the project. So, Doug, if you want to kick it off, or I can do it either way.
Nathan, why don't you go ahead? I'm here to answer questions and give any background the committee needs on the tax-related issues.
Okay, please. Great. So the 3-mile project is largely unchanged from what was presented in the original request for the $40 million of allocation last summer. There are a couple updates related to the project and the timing of the project as presented in the updated application materials that you guys received today. There were some construction delays, some delayed contract negotiations, and an overall kind of softening in the market that delayed another transaction that Equilibrium was working on that ended up closing in November of 2018. In addition to that, we recently undertook a more detailed budget analysis working with Doug's team at ORIC to make sure we fully understood the tax-exempt portion of the budget. And that exercise, which is still ongoing, is what led us to the conclusion that we can probably only use up to $15 million of private activity bond allocation for this transaction. So that's what's driving kind of the changes and the current request. We're still planning on pursuing a $40 million total bond raise for this project, but it will likely come in the form of $15 million of tax-exempt bonds and $25 million of taxable bonds. So we're working through the structuring of that currently.
Can I ask a question? Because a few days ago, some correspondence between Doug and Martha suggested that that tax-exempt portion may actually range from 10 to 15. So has there been any clarification? Because I think that's why I was thinking that if there's a swing in the number, you don't know the number, I'd hate to give someone carry forward if they didn't need it. Do you have any new insights since maybe 2-3 days ago?
We don't. We have a follow-up meeting to address that specific question scheduled for later today. So we should know pretty quickly, but we're just still digging into the kind of granular level of the project budget to figure that out.
Is there a bottom, like, is there a minimum that you're really confident will be tax exempt?
I think the $10 million. Go ahead, Doug.
So I would say the $10 million number, I would say, is we have a high degree of confidence in. I think there is a good chance with respect to the additional $5 million, but that's really what this afternoon's call. We got some additional, the tax lawyers got some additional information late yesterday afternoon, and they want to kind of walk through that with the 3-mile farm folks. You know, without going through that analysis, you all know what that process is like. And so until they do that, we can't. But I think in terms of the $10 million, we have a high degree of confidence.
And this is something we can debate later, but just for that swing $5 million, if we granted it, let's just say we granted it up to the 15, and let's say you didn't use it all, would Port of Morro have other solid waste disposal facility projects anywhere in their planning horizon so that it didn't go to waste? Or is that really hard to know at this point?
That would be difficult to know at this time.
Sorry?
Please repeat.
I said that would be difficult to know at this time.
Okay. And that's fair.
Laura, I would, we are counsel to a another project who is interested in a solid waste project located within the port, and that project has met with Treasurer Reed, and that would be a project in the $90 to $100 million
Well,
range.
Since they're not here today,
right?
Doug,
no, understood. So
they needed to come and talk.
Exactly. In terms of the assurance of when that would occur, they have indicated it won't be in 2019.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Is the closing date I see is now estimated to be the middle of May. I know that you were delayed as an organization. You were Equity Capital was also working, or Equilibrium was working on a project in Arizona. How sure are we about the May date, relatively speaking? Because, you know, last year we thought it was going to happen by now. Anybody who's one of the bankers speak to that?
Yeah, so I'm joined here by Christian Cochran from Equilibrium, and he can probably field that question better than I can.
The May date was chosen because that's when we will reach commercial operation. So right now our critical path is our gas transmission line, and we're working with GTN, and the date they've committed to completing that portion of the project is May 15th.
Okay.
And
are there any bumps in the road in the Arizona transaction? Is that sort of the realization that you need to be up and operational before you finance rather than finance before you're up and operational? I'm just curious.
That was part of it. The other part of it, probably the more significant part, was just that transaction took a little longer than expected to close. And Equilibrium kind of needed to close out that one before switching gears to this one.
But the construction of this revised project is going on out in Boardman as we speak, right? I mean, this is going to happen.
Correct. Construction is, we're more than 50% into it. So no, this is happening as we speak.
From board.
Right. So the bond transaction represents a refinancing of all or a portion of the debt component of the construction financing?
All or a portion of the equity financing. The construction is being financed with equity.
Okay. Any questions, Jean?
I don't have any.
Any other comments for the good of the order?
This is done with a mix of carry forward and current year, because of course we've got a lot more flexibility with current year. Is that a problem?
Not that I'm aware of. I would probably defer to Doug on that one.
Thank you, Nathan. I think Mr. Anderson, we're flexible, as the company indicated in its cover email to Ms. Kellums yesterday.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next applicant that we'll hear from today, turning back to my agenda, is Oregon Housing and Community Services. And while we've asked them to speak about their request for carry forward, probably have some extra questions because we don't have anybody from Metro here. So in addition to talking about your own agency's needs, I may ask a few questions, and I'm sure you have some, about status now that the constitutional amendment, Measure 102, passed. We anticipate lots more requests through PAB and through the state for housing.
Certainly, Madam Chair, thank you for that. We'll do our best. For the record, my name is Margaret Salazar, and I'm Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. And with me today, I have Bob Larson, who heads up our debt management team at the agency. Oregon Housing and Community Services Department is requesting $75 million of carry-forward authority available from the State of Oregon's unused 2018 current year private activity bond allocation. And if received, our agency would use the 2018 PAB carry-forward to issue $37.5 million of bonds for multifamily qualified rental projects and $37.5 million of bonds for single-family mortgage loans. OHCS produced historic levels of financing activity in both multifamily and single-family housing in 2018, and so we have a brief summary for you of the accomplishments and the current status of the multifamily and single-family bond program. So we'll start today with the single-family program. In 2018, the residential loan program purchased 1,130 mortgage loans totaling approximately $254.3 million. This is the largest number and amount of mortgage loans purchased in any calendar year since 2008. This amount of loan activity nearly doubled the $133.8 million of mortgage loans purchased in 2017 and quadrupled the $60.3 million of mortgage loans purchases in 2016. This is both an indication of our attention to outreach and marketing of the program and lender relationships, as well as the interest rate environment for this program. In 2018, approximately 20.1% of the single-family loans purchased were for borrowers at or below 80% of area median income. At least 19.4% of the borrowers served in 2018 were minority households, and we are pushing on those goals very strongly as well. OHCS made loans in 32 counties in 2018 and continues to have active loans in all 36 Oregon counties. The residential program currently has 8 active participating lenders, and we expect to add an additional lender in the program early this year. Historically, OHCS has been one of Oregon's largest investors in USDA, Rural Development Guaranteed Rural Housing Loans. In 2018, OHCS purchased 201 loans totaling $43.3 million that were insured by the USDA Rural Development Loan Program. Currently, OHCS is reserving 30-year fixed-rate mortgage loans at an interest rate at 4.125% for rate advantage loans and 4.875% for cash advantage loans, which provides 3% for closing cost assistance. OHCS currently has 214 loan reservations totaling approximately $48.3 million in our system. OHCS will continue to take advantage of various financing techniques and opportunities, including economic refunding of previously issued bonds, blending of bond proceeds from different bond issues, use of recycled prepayments, and using taxable bonds in conjunction with tax-exempt bond structures. And you can ask Bob Larson the details of all of those mechanisms, please, to finance single-family mortgage loans under the current bond program. OHCS currently has approximately $45.3 million of 0% proceeds created from refunding transactions in 2017 and 2018, which are available for blending with new money and recycled bond proceeds. This allows OHCS to continue to offer interest rates for single-family mortgage loans significantly below market rate for the next couple of years. And unless the committee has questions, I'll move on to talk about our multifamily production. Okay, so moving on to multifamily programs, a banner year in our multifamily programs as well. In 2018, OHCS financed 10 multifamily projects with pass-through revenue bond issuance, totaling approximately $152 million. This was the second largest amount of multifamily bond issuance in any year in the agency's history, only behind the $174.3 million of multifamily bond issuance in 2017. With these resources, OHCS was able to create or preserve 1,134 units of multifamily housing in 2018. And similar to my comments about single-family programs, this was as much about leveraging new state resources that the legislature has made available to the agency with these bond programs, as well as marketing and streamlining and creating efficient processes to better serve our customers throughout Oregon. Of the 1,134 total housing units financed from 2018 bond issuance, 1,131 units, 99.7% of the units, will provide rental housing for residents at or below 60% of area median income, including 330 units, 29.1% of the units, that will provide rental housing for residents at or below 50% of area median income. During 2019, OHCS expects to increase issuance of tax-exempt bonds to finance affordable multifamily housing under the agency's pass-through revenue bond conduit program in an effort to address the affordable housing crisis throughout the state. Current estimates for 2019 issuance include financing totaling around $306 million for 2,085 housing units and 20 projects. The projects currently in our pipeline anticipated in 2019 include projects in Portland, Salem, Eugene, Gresham, Hillsborough, Tigard, Milwaukee, Newport, Hermiston, and Ontario.
Could I ask you a question? We'll be talking about Metro in a minute.
Certainly.
Do you anticipate that in this 306 there'll be these partnerships in terms of gap funding? I know we have gap funding, but also maybe some Metro gap funding?
We do not expect that any of these projects will have Metro gap funding for 2019. These are
so Metro will be coming in with their partners on top of this.
That's right.
For multifamily.
Yes.
That's what I
want. Potentially, yes. And
okay.
We'll get to their timing is kind
sure.
of a separate question, but this projection
this is
that
your
we have,
group.
This is the projects that we are currently working on that have leveraged state dollars, state gap dollars, as well as in some cases local government dollars, but they are not the Metro bond funds from the bond that just passed in November.
Thank you.
OHCS currently has received applications from multifamily housing developers looking to finance four projects through the issuance of pass-through revenue bonds prior to June 30, 2019. In an aggregate amount of approximately $184.8 million, these projects will create or preserve 1,332 housing units. During calendar years 2019 through 2021, OHCS expects to receive an additional $64 million of local innovation and fast track or LIFT proceeds and an additional $25 million of preservation funds for the financing of affordable multifamily projects throughout the state. Many of these funds are expected to be used in conjunction with the proceeds of private activity bond issuance and the companion 4% federal low-income housing tax credit that accompany these PAB proceeds. During this three-year period, OHCS estimates that approximately $194.4 million of PAB issuance for LIFT projects and approximately $103.8 million of PAB issuance for preservation projects. So that's a summary of our multifamily current pipeline and outlook and our recent activity. And then just a few words about our current private activity bond status. At present, OHCS has the following private activity bond authority. 2016 carry forward elected for multifamily housing, which expires 12/31/2019, $144.7 million. 2017 carry forward also elected for multifamily housing, which expires 12/31/2020, $251.8 million. 2019 current year reverts back 12/31/2019, $125 million. Total PAB authority, $521.5 million. During 2018, OHCS used all of the remaining 2015 carry forward, all elected for single-family qualified mortgage bonds, and all but $4,669 of the 2018 current year, so pretty close to the full 2018 current year PAB allocation. And I'm told that's the first time in history that has happened.
Since I've worked here, yes.
Which, again, reflects the increased volume and activity of the agency. OHCS expects that the $125 million of 2019 current year PAB allocation, together with the $37.5 million of requested 2018 carry-forward allocation, will be sufficient to meet the agency's single-family issuance needs for 2019. OHCS expects that the remaining $144.7 million of the 2016 carry-forward and $251.8 million of the 2017 carry-forward, together with the $37.5 million requested 2018 carry-forward allocation, will be sufficient to meet OHCS's multifamily issuance needs through 2020. OHCS respectfully requests $75 million of 2018 PAB carry-forward allocation. We will make elections to use $37.5 million of this allocation to finance qualified residential rental projects, multifamily projects, and $37.5 million of this allocation to finance single-family mortgage loans. To the extent that additional 2018 private activity bond carry-forward allocation is available and allocated to OHCS, we would propose to make an election to use any additional allocations for financing multifamily qualified residential rental projects, really for the reasons that I stated with the additional funding available in multifamily. We are always happy, of course, to receive more carry-forward allocation. As I mentioned, we have record activity, both single-family and multifamily, so if we were to receive additional carry-forward I think the most prudent thing for us to do would be to actually split that between single family and multifamily, given the additional volume in both of those programs. OHCS wants to also note that we appreciate the support received for the Private Activity Bond Committee in previous years, which has allowed the agency to increase this activity to address the state's need for affordable housing, and this allocation would be a useful and invaluable resource to assist OHCS in future efforts to address the need for affordable housing throughout Oregon. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Two things for the committee. We put in a revised. Bob and I have just been working on sort of an all or nothing for carry forward. And with the revisions that I got from Port of Morrow, I had just run these numbers with Bob. And it's just sort of summarizing for the committee and in a table. If you got all the carry forward, less whatever Port of Morrow needed. So now I have it as the $10 million, just so you can see the all or nothing implications. But it also shows you in these in the spreadsheet kind of the projected work level and financing level. One other thing I wanted to note was when the governor submitted her budget to the legislature in December, and Jean was very involved in this, she has recommended the legislature double the allocation of PAB that is provided to Oregon Housing Community Services starting in 2020. And so these spreadsheets reflect that reality because of the level of activity that is obvious that you're embarking on. We just did rating agency presentations where George Naughton talked about tripling the amount of production that's going to be financed through your agency. And I know you're asking for a lot of new positions.
And if anyone has any additional caffeine that they can give to our team, we'd be pleased. I would just say that, just to be clear, I think the increase in PAB request is aligned with the governor's budget submission, which is requesting additional significant increase in the LIFT program, as well as permanent supportive housing funding and preservation dollars, all of which work really nicely paired with private activity bonds and 4% tax credits. So it's really an anticipation of those additional state gap funds to make
right.
these projects come to fruition.
And the reason I showed the, let's say we didn't give them any carry forward this year, but all these other things happen, without giving them some carry forward, you don't have enough to be able to meet all the things that you need to do.
Right.
And so that's really why I counterposed the bottom part, just to make it clear that with all the help you're getting, nevertheless, and this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Metro.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
But we are kind of interested in, when Jonathan speaks, maybe he'll know more. What I'm curious about, because I've been calling people and just trying to learn more about what both Portland Housing Bureau and Metro's plans are, and I don't know about Housing Bureau, to be perfectly honest, but what I've heard from the investment bankers, and I know ORIC is bond counsel, is that they're planning on selling $652 million in taxable GO bonds in May, which means that they're not going to be coming to us and asking directly for PAB, but then they're going to be sub-allocating to a host of different partners, both, I assume, housing authorities as well as perhaps nonprofits and local governments, who will be coming and knocking on our door.
Right.
And so if you have any insights as to whether you think some of those folks will be knocking on your door, with assuming you get additional PAB, or whether they'll be knocking on our door, I think that, again, it may be too soon to tell, but I'm just kind of curious, in your longer-term numbers for 20 and 21, what assumptions you're making.
So, and I will certainly invite Mr. Larson to add to this, and I would just say, Madam Chair, these are great questions. These are absolutely critical questions, and our recommendation to our friends at Metro and the local governments in the Metro area is that it would be wonderful for them to address the committee directly and explain the timing and the planning so that you all can hear directly from the horse's mouth. But our understanding is that in the Metro area, there's a potential for 3 to 4 projects to be ready to come to this committee for allocation in 2019 that would be not coming through our agency but would
mm-hmm.
be coming directly to the committee for allocation in 2019. That's the potential 3 to 4 sort of early projects that might be ready to go, affordable housing
Any
projects.
Any guesstimate as to the dollar size? I mean,
Would these where Metro would serve as the issuer?
No.
It would be the local.
It's always going to be
the
local,
local,
and they're going to get some gap
authority.
Funding, just like
right.
LIFT is gap funding.
Right. Metro is local, though.
That's right.
Not a state agency.
That's right. But they are sub-allocating to local governments and housing authorities. And so those entities would then be coming before the committee asking for PAB authority to go along with those metro funds that they're...
They won't be able to use the metro funds if they're taxable for tax credit matching. So it'll be equity from the GOs plus some tax-exempt bonds plus tax credits. You add the three together to get to the project size. Am I right?
I think that's right.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's an A plus B plus C.
That's right.
Equal. And we have no
We don't know
size.
Anything about those projects.
Yeah.
Because they're metro area projects, I would assume they might be larger than some of the rural projects that we typically do.
Sure.
And so that's the only inkling I have, though. We don't know anything about those projects. And again, some of our local friends might be able to give you more of a sense if they were to come back.
Could you talk about the timing? I know that you mentioned to me when we spoke last week on the phone that there's a process that Metro is going to create in terms of each of the sub-agencies having a plan. When do they have to file those plans with Metro? I thought you said in July. Yeah. I thought perhaps I would love you to come forward and talk to the microphone.
And Laura, this is Chris Reynolds from ORIC. We're serving as bond counsel and happy to add anything subject to the folks in the room's comments first.
Right.
Well, and again, I don't mean to put anybody on the spot, but in the absence of knowing and exactly, it's just going to help us make better deliberations today. So,
repeat your question.
My question is more, tell us what you know, and Jonathan will add some color about just the larger process of doing the sub-allocation, because that might give us a sense as to really when any projects could be ready, because I thought I heard Margaret tell me that there's a methodology to get your projects, like your longer-term plans in place.
Right. So Julie Coney, Oregon Housing Community Services, it is our understanding that they are, all of the jurisdictions are submitting proposals that outline their implementation process to Metro around June of this year, May, June. Then they will be approved by Metro and then start implementing. And at that time, and the reason that you'll see three or four projects this year potentially is that they're all looking at phase one projects. They're all trying to find at least
a good pilot
project to go through their process with. And then they will be coming out with a notice of funding availability kind of late summer, early fall, that will take them into having projects identified in early 2020. And they're anticipating that between the middle of this year and all of next year that we'll see approximately 14 or 15 projects being allocated Metro funds.
Well, when you sell taxable bonds, you don't have to worry about spend downs in 3 years. So they can just issue all these bonds taxably, invest the proceeds, and then just dole it out over time, right? So that's simple.
I'll make one more comment because that's a very, very important timing comment. We assume that the majority of those 14 to 15 projects that would come forward in 2020, again, that the locals would be issuing, that they would be coming to you for the PAB authority, that they wouldn't be coming through us for the conduit bonds.
We'll have half as much allocation available by 2020 if the budget of the governor. So we'll see if they all come to us because we'll run out pretty quick.
Right.
Well, and depending on the type of project that they're trying to build, and there are a lot of goals about getting a lot of extremely low-income 0 to 30 units, they may need additional gap funding that they could come to us. And if they come to us for gap funds, we will be the bond issuer, and we would be using
And you'll use your CAB.
Right. And so that's the piece that, just to let the committee know, we don't yet know of that 14 to 15 projects, how many we would be bringing forward versus others.
Yeah. So we have a lot of kind of question marks today, but I think a process is going to emerge, and we'll know more. Yeah. Would you agree? By summer, at least.
Yes, sir.
It'll become clear.
And the projections that I had provided you previously, those did not include any assumptions as it related to the Metro bonds being part of our issue.
Really?
So
everyone is going to try and do their very best, and we're going to all realize very quickly that we have hit a gap and that we need to change the federal law because we will not have enough PAB to leverage 4% tax credits fairly quickly.
That's right.
Would you agree?
Yes.
And then we may face the problem of, do we do single-family tax exempt, or whether we have to do more of it taxably and whether we can still provide low-cost financing for people.
Right.
Because that's really the only place where housing can modify.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we are exploring various models, as we mentioned, and always looking at these different avenues, including in the single-family space, but these will take time to take hold.
Right. And we may be able to use variable rate more than we have and things like that just to keep the interest cost on the taxable side would be my guess. Do you have other questions for housing?
I have a quick question
sure.
on how the election works. When you take the total $75 million and you split it half and half between single and multifamily, what does that mean? Does it mean that that's how they absolutely have to use it, or is there
yes.
still some flexibility?
It's irrevocable once you make that election with the IRS. We have to file the tax form by the 15th of February. So, you know, we'll identify a specific line item on there that it applies to. But once we make that election, it's permanent.
Okay.
Can't be transferred. We have to use it for that.
Right. And that's, you know, for housing, we've done it under different IRC codes. Sometimes we've done carry forward for specific projects. We've kind of learned our lesson, and we tend to do it broader so that if it's in the same category, then if it doesn't get used, it can be reused. So current, they don't have to identify specifically during the course of the calendar year. It's only in the carry forward world where you have to. Other questions about for housing?
Yeah, I have sort of one on your own programs and one of, gee, what do you know about Metro? and the answer may be not a whole lot. Relative to your own programs and your multifamily programs, what portion of the financing occur as taxable tails?
I don't have that.
The LIFT program in its entirety is taxable. So we sold $40 million this past year. We're about to sell another $40 million completely taxable. So that really is the model.
But are you talking about the conduit?
Yeah.
Because
the conduit part?
Most of our bonds have been 100%
okay, so it's a very small number.
It will.
It may be
there
zero.
Have been a couple
but small.
Some very small
yeah.
amounts of tax.
And it will start to shift. We will need to start to shift.
I was
going to
say, in an environment where your volume cap constrained, are you thinking about a shift?
Yes.
Definitely.
Good. That would be a good idea. And so here's the Metro one, and this is under the yes, I understand that if Metro were to issue all taxable bonds, it's a very simple model. There's one transaction. You just, as you know, soft deferred pay debt, loan this stuff into other tax credits. But the simplicity comes at the cost of leaving a great deal of money on the table. And the last time I looked, even with almost $1 billion in local affordable housing bond authority, which is what you've got in the Portland metro area right now, undrawn, that's only about 1/7 of the forecast aggregate investment requirement. So it's a big number, but it ain't big enough. So if it ain't big enough, why are you leaving money on the table? That's a question for Metro, not you. But, and to me, as a big picture policy question, the answer in front of me right now just doesn't make a lot of sense. Oh, it's more convenient, or oh, it's simpler. Well, I understand that, but this is a big problem. And do you want simple, or do you want a bigger bat on the ball? And I would love for somebody from Metro to provide a well-informed, thoughtful answer to that question, because that's a problem. I mean, if that problem winds up in the newspapers, you know, given the amount of visibility that this issue has, that wouldn't be a good thing.
Well, to play devil's advocate, we have, based on the current math, we get $440 million of PAB, and some of it's allocated to state agencies. We have economic development projects we're about to hear about. We have energy projects. We want to help solid waste projects. So it's not just housing. You know, we have – this has to go a long way. So multiply 440 times 5 years, and you get $2 billion. And during that, let's say, just a five-year period, we got to do a lot of stuff. So I don't think Metro could really leverage those dollars because there wouldn't be enough PAB for them, for their projects, along with all the other economic development projects. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm just saying that that's part of our job and ultimately the legislature's job, because I've highlighted this in the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission report, is that our statute just says, give it to everybody. It doesn't say who to prioritize it to. And I think that that's going to become the hot issue. And I would even argue, even within the housing circle, what's the highest priority? Because that's going to become really obvious as we all go forward. So, you know, maybe Metro isn't maximizing it, but I just, in a way, it's helping us from having a precipitous problem of wanting to fund everything and everybody. I don't know how else to put it. I just don't know how we can get there. And so I don't disagree
with you. I'm not sure you get there. I think you get closer than you do under an approach which squanders an opportunity.
Well, to the extent that housing, Oregon housing is going to get more, I guess we're reducing the squandering because we're collectively trying to triple the pipeline, and we're not going to solve the entire problem, I guess is maybe a simpler way of answering it.
Of course, you know, to the extent that tripling the pipeline depends on activities of the Congress, we all know what a high-functioning body that is.
No comment. Thank you.
Say, that $3.95 gets you a latte.
Well,
lucky.
I wanted to say one other thing about the PAB, which is that I'm, as a member of National Association of State Treasurers, and I was recently on a call with other state debt managers, we have initiated doing a survey among the 50 states to figure out if this PAB shortage is a West Coast problem, because all the treasurer's representatives from Washington, Oregon, and California said, yes, it is. And there was dead silence from Mississippi and from Nebraska and places like that. Sure. But we're going to be doing a survey and taking a look at whether there could be anything to do in Congress. My treasurer was just appointed the chair of the Legislative Committee of the National Association of Treasurers. So we're going to take those results. And I know that CDFA also does that work, but we're going to just kind of channel it through this body. And so Treasurer Reed is very interested in working with our federal legislative delegation, if Congress ever meets again, to see if we can use this crisis of PAB, which we see is coming at us with Metro and all the other projects we need, and just see if there's any movement. I don't know that there's a good answer, but at least he's willing to pick up the charge.
That's great. Thank you.
I mean, Hope springs eternal. Okay.
Laura, for the record, under the fourth bullet point under multifamily, that should be 14 projects, not 4.
Okay. Duly noted. Well, thank you guys. Doing a great job.
Thank you
and,
so much.
I will agree that my staff has been side by side with your staff. And we're getting cauliflower ears from all the phone calls. So.
Thank you so much.
Great. So I think our next presentation, if I'm not mistaken, would be the Oregon Business Development Department. Am I right? Did I get that right? I think so. With a project related to water, sewer, sewage improvements on the Intel campus.
Great. So I'll kick this off. So I'm David Weiss, a business finance officer with OBDD, or Business Oregon. Today we have many people. We've got our agency director, Chris Harder, and he'll be speaking to kick this off. We have John Saris, finance manager, back in the audience. From Intel, we've got several people in person, several of whom flew up from Santa Clara. Gary Kershaw, VP of, and I'm giving abbreviated job titles here, Gary Kershaw, VP of Finance, Julia Lebedeva-Beck, Treasury Director for Investments and Foreign Exchange Management, Tiffany Dune-Silva, Senior Group Counsel, and Courtney Martin, Oregon, California Public Affairs Director. By phone, we have Alan Abravanel with Perkins Coie. Bond Council, State's Bond Council for this project, Ora Carrington and Sutcliffe. We have Doug Goh, partner in person. By phone, we've got Chris Reynolds, partner, and Chaz Cardell, partner, and also the tax attorney on this project. From Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, we have by phone Lawrence Tonomura, who's managing director. Sounds like we've got a few others from BAML as well. So Chris Harder is going to kick this off. I'll provide some comments, and then we'll hear from the Intel representatives and open it up for questions for everybody. Take it away.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak. It's my first PABC meeting, and I'm going to provide a high-level overview and turn it over to the smart people on this project. So a bit about Intel. Their four campuses in Washington County make up their largest concentration of facilities in the entire world. They are Oregon's largest private sector employer with a workforce of about 20,000 people. Not only is Intel's economic impact in Oregon enormous, some would say, as Intel goes, so does our state's economy if you look at certain macro indicators. But perhaps even more importantly, for those of us in economic development, the talent that they bring into the state, the suppliers they use within the state, the technology that they create all position Oregon for long-term economic competitiveness. For every job Intel has in Oregon, approximately three are created statewide, kind of by that indirect impact. As a company, they've invested more than $40 billion since 1974 in the state alone. They are the largest property tax payer in Washington County, and I don't even think that's close, close or big distance to number two. As an agency, we've worked with the company for many years, and we've used various tools provided by the legislature to help manufacturers like them grow, so the industrial development bond being one of those. Just a little bit about the project that they're undertaking. It's to revamp their wastewater, effluent, and air emission systems. This project will enable future investment at its Rondler Acres campus, so it has a kind of a future impact for us. It will also create significant construction jobs as well as new permanent jobs in Oregon. And, of course, by treating industrial water from the manufacturing operations and recycling that back into use, it helps us meet our state's environmental sustainability goals as well. Would also like to talk a bit about the volume cap, because I think that's going to be a big topic today. So as we all know, in recent years, supply and demand has been, you know, favorable when coming for asks. We are now certainly in a different situation where demand may exceed the supply. And, of course, I think this possibility relates to your previous presenters and the goal we all have around housing and affordable housing. We are here to say we believe there is a growing problem of affordable housing in the state. The governor has certainly made it a priority. We've passed ballot measures around it. And I can tell you from an agency, almost every company we directly work with support the need for investments in housing. At the same time, and I think this is kind of the balance we're presenting, we must continue to build on our economic strengths and help our most significant job creators. We believe the Intel project has a high probability of closing in the first half of 2019 if they were the project was approved for adequate allocation. We understand that it's up to you to kind of strike that balance between complementary requests. But I want to be here today to say that I strongly support Intel's request to use this bond allocation today, and we respectfully ask that you approve our request for $120 million in allocation on behalf of the company.
Could you also talk about what your own agency allocation is going to go into the project?
Yes, sure, I can address that.
Yeah.
So OBDD, we have $40 million for calendar year 2019. We're prepared to commit 30 of that $40 million to this project.
So the overall financing would be $150 million?
Correct, for this initial bond,
this, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so
is there another bond that's contemplated?
Actually, I'll be talking about that. So,
okay.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. Well, actually, I could talk about that now.
Please do. We'd love to hear.
Good segue. So the initial request is for $150 million at this point. We will, assuming this is approved, and that's our hope, we'll be assessing the situation with PAB availability in the second half of 2019 and into 2020.
I think you're going to hear that it's going to be harder and harder as the year goes by.
Yeah. So we'll be assessing the situation. Our agency authority, we're requesting an increase in that with the new bond limit bill. So after we have increased authority, if allocation is available, we would be making a future request. Yeah.
Could I ask the folks from Intel or someone to talk about, are you phasing the construction project so that it's easy to have two pieces of financing versus one? Are you worried about rising interest rates, which could swamp spreads between taxable and tax-exempt anyway?
Gary Gershay. It's not phased per se. The total investment is some $600 million.
600, not 300, I had read.
Project.
I see.
Approximately $300 million is eligible.
I see.
From a PAB perspective. So and our request is to execute a $150 million transaction with the support of...
Could you tell us a little bit more about the $600 million project? Because that's an enormous sewer treatment facility, probably bigger than any other than when I financed sewer bonds in San Francisco. So that's... I can't even imagine the scale of what you're talking about, and I guess I couldn't quite tell in the documentation what exactly the project was.
Portland's big pipe was $2 billion.
Sure, but that's a lot for one site. So.
Well, I'll caveat that you were talking to a finance person.
That's all right, me too.
And not an engineer. We still have many of those. We're processing something in the region of $2 to $3 billion gallons of water. Our goal is to be sustainable. So whatever we use, we want to reuse. That's our long-term corporate goal. We're not there today. Essentially, we want to take all of the streams that come from our Ronald Acres campus. We separate that. We stabilize that water as it comes out of the manufacturing process. We're then, this facility is actually introducing a new organic-based project, process whereby we're actually using biology to take the chemicals out of the water. We then do some further purification, and then we either recycle that water back into our facility so it goes around in a circle,
sure.
Or we deliver the purified water in acceptable form into the Clean Water Services pool. So the project is certainly, to one extent, it's supporting existing operations. To another extent, it's really future-proofing the Oregon site for further investments, which we will be competing with other Intel sites to make.
Okay.
We also believe it takes a fairly significant burden off the local water authority in terms of the work they have to do. So we're really taking more responsibility, doing more of the heavy lifting ourselves. And, we are in a capital-intensive industry. The things we do cost a lot of money. We talked about the $40 billion over four decades. So pretty much everything we do these days is very, very expensive. And we do recognize...
So is this a tertiary treatment level? I mean, I'm just using my finance person.
Okay,
you're taking it past secondary treatment. You're in tertiary because... Or it's not going to be used for drinking water, but it can be used...
The water we can return to Clean Water Services is...
Drinkable.
It goes back into the water supply for the community.
So that's in California, we usually call that tertiary level treatment. So, okay. So you're really, really doing...
It's soup to nuts.
Cutting edge technology in the water, in the sewer. Would it be fair to say that?
Yes, absolutely. It's, it's green technology, if you will.
Okay.
It's absolutely cutting edge, and it's very expensive, but it's critical to have Oregon ready to receive the next wave should Intel be willing to make those investments.
Great.
So I was hoping to make some more agency comments and open it up for ORIC and BAML and the rest of the Intel crew. So I'll try not to repeat what's already been covered. So you had asked about the project. In a very few words, it's capital investments for wastewater treatment, water recycling, solid waste, and other activities at Rondler Acres. So the total project is $600 million. So Intel is seeking tax-exempt bond financing for $300 million total. The balance would come from Intel resources. And as we discussed, there's the current request for $150 million, and there may be a second request. So in this initial $150 million bond issue, based on recent conclusions of the tax analysis, this started out as a combo of solid waste disposal and sewage facilities. This initial $150, it is all Section 142A5 sewage facilities, one of the types of exempt facilities. So real quickly, where this project is with the public process, our finance committee has approved it for declaration of intent for eligibility. Treasury has given preliminary approval. We haven't started the TEFRA process yet. That would be next after this meeting. The hearing, governor's TEFRA approval. The bond financing, it won't happen without the project getting an adequate amount of volume cap, which is why we're here today. The public benefits, should I touch on those, or do you feel like you got that out of all the...
I think we've got that.
Okay.
Assuming you got the allocation from the committee today, when would the financing occur?
So it would occur in the first half of March.
Okay.
We have our on council appointed. We have our banker appointed. We're pretty much ready to go, pending the successful outcome of this meeting.
Okay. Yeah, and one thing I wanted to say on that is that this isn't a projections-based deal. This is a real project we've got before us today. We think it is reasonable to assume it could close in the first half of 2019 if it gets adequate volume cap. So some history, Intel can get bonds closed very quickly. So I had worked on the 2010.
I remember.
One of the advantages.
We did it in one
day for a
month.
yeah, practically.
Christmas time.
Yeah, well, that would be
outside. Yeah.
It was a $142 million bond issue, roughly, from the time we did eligibility approval to closing. It was a little less than 2 months.
In fact,
so
we recently remarketed that issuance.
I know.
Mid of last
year.
Yeah,
I signed the paperwork.
Very well received. And gives us confidence that we can quickly go to market in this instance.
And I'm very confident in your finance team.
Yeah. BAML was the underwriter on that deal.
Yeah.
So one thing I wanted to do is kind of clarify this carry forward versus current year request, just so it is clear what we're requesting. So we've requested one or a combination of both. And the reason we started out down that with that path was we thought getting a little carry forward would put less pressure on the current year, since our goal is to get the $120 million total. So originally in the papers we sent you in mid-December, we said we're indifferent between those two buckets. However, based on recent conversations we've had, including with Housing and Community Services, carry forward gives Housing and Community Services more flexibility. One kind of quirky thing is it gives us less flexibility because of this one IRC section type this project has turned into, at least the initial $150 million. So if it were approved for carry forward today, we file papers with the IRS. It's for that section code. And so if for some reason this didn't close, and that's probably only because it doesn't get enough allocation today, we'd be stuck with a sewage facility carry forward allocation. And all the time I've been here, we've never done a sewage facility bond. We probably never will do a sewage facility bond. So our preference would be that we get $120 million in 2019 current year allocation. That would be our first choice if we have a choice. Second choice would be a combination of the two buckets, which totals $120 million, if that's what's needed to get us to this total of $120 million. If we're approved for less than $120 million total, we'd prefer it all be 2019 current year allocation. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. I'm curious, I know that you've now picked BAML. I don't know that we necessarily knew that. And at the time, we had asked for sort of sources and uses. Can someone maybe from BAML give us a ballpark estimate of the difference in interest rates between taxable and tax-exempt? Which, you know, it's not an absolute thing, but getting PAB or not getting PAB because you're going to, you know, there's a cost of funds to you in a taxable world. Would it be fair that it's about 1%?
Yes, in the 3 to 5 year period, which you would look to initially tranche, we're talking about 1%.
Okay. So it's 1% on 150 million.
So it's a significant benefit for Intel.
Other questions from board members?
Sure. You talked about there possibly being a second approximately like-sized request in the back half of the year.
Possibly.
And impacts on project viability, should there be no volume cap at that point?
We would use internal resources. We would either use internal cash on balance sheet or we would seek taxable funding.
Okay. So the project remains viable. Should it require seek additional volume cap and there be none available in the back half of the year?
Yeah, we recognize there are very, very important competing uses for funds, and funds are scarce. Our goal is to, we're going to look at this situationally. We think we have a great project here. We think it sets us up for future investment in Oregon. And we've talked about the benefits that Intel has brought to Oregon thus far, and we want to continue to do that. Clearly, there's numbers either add up or they don't, right? And to the extent that there's further funds available, that would be wonderful, but that isn't our concern of today. Our concern of today is to secure an appropriate volume cap to allow us to go to market.
Great. Any other questions?
I don't have questions. I just want to comment that given our warmer climate of late and the scarcity that water is and is going to become more and more scarce, that I can certainly appreciate being able to recycle 1 billion gallons of water a year.
Yes, because we have a growing population that's going to need that water, too, particularly up in Washington County.
And I think that's consistent with Intel's, our goal is to be the model corporate citizen. Hopefully we've demonstrated that over a number of years in this state and around the world. So when we look at our use of green power, diversity hiring, equal pay for across genders, all of these things, they don't just occur. They're part of a global strategy, and we want to execute wherever we operate.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I would like to just, for the record, thank Chris and particularly David, who's navigated through these unfamiliar waters.
But clean water, so. Our last presenter before we begin deliberations is Jonathan Trott and others from Home Forward. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to talk about our, it's not an ask at this point, but to give you a preview of what may be coming as we work on rehabilitating our significant portfolio of public housing. So we are roughly halfway through a 10-year initiative to convert all of our public housing to a different flavor of federal subsidy. And preserve them. So the goals set by our board from the outset were serve the exact same population, get into the buildings and renovate them such that they're going to continue to be part of our housing infrastructure for the next generation and generations, and to leverage as much private capital as possible in order to undertake all of the repairs that are needed. So, as I said, we're about halfway through. The 2,700 units have been divided into 9 groups. Groups 1 through 4 are done. And as we move into groups 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, we're at the point where all of the properties that comprise those groups, is roughly 30-odd different sites, many with multiple buildings, have enough capital needs that they necessitate using 4% low-income housing tax credits, which in turn is the reason that we come before you and ask for allocations of tax-exempt private activity bonds. So
I'm here to talk about what we anticipate coming back before the committee with in the fourth quarter of this year, which would be Group 7. And I want to give a little bit more context about how the allocations of private activity bonds that we receive facilitate our goals and our mission. So last year, we received an allocation of $56 million of private activity bonds for Group 5. The construction is now underway at the 7 properties, Group 5. There's 350 units there. And that $56 million worth of private activity bond allocation enabled us to attract $34 million of private investment through low-income housing tax credits, and we are undertaking $33 million worth of rehab at those 7 properties. And I wanted to just, it's properties, it's tax credits, those things can be abstract. There are almost 600 people who live in these 350 units. This is in Group 5, and I would say this is representative of other groups you will see that I come forward with, such as Group 7. 591 people in 350 units. Average household income is $10,000 a year. 33% of that population are seniors. A quarter of the population are kids under 18. And 48% of the approximately 600 people who live in these units are persons of color. So this is really as deep a mission, kind of affordable housing work, as you could be doing in terms of the income level served, and also as we think about an equity lens and who exactly is benefiting from the public investment in these units. So you might wonder what happened to Group 6. So I'm here telling you, giving you a preview of Group 7. Group 6 is on track to close and start its construction in second quarter of 2019. That's the year it is. And it has some OHCS gap funding in it, actually significant OHCS gap funding in it. And so for that group, we will be accessing the private activity bonds we need through OHCS's allocation. Not exactly sure exactly how we'll do Group 7. And whether there will be any gap funding available from OHCS that we can utilize or not. So in an abundance of caution, as you try to think through all the requests you're going to be seeing, Group 7 may be like Group 5, where we come and ask for, as we showed here, roughly $56 million of a private activity bond request.
And what's Group 8 going to be?
Group 8.
Isn't that the last one?
There's Group 8 and there's Group 9.
I mean, it doesn't have to be this year, but I think it's useful to think like multiple years, as Margaret suggested.
Yeah, I mean, Group 8 would come in 2020, Group 9, 2020 or 2021.
In the 50, 60 million?
In the same ranges, yes.
Which goes to my point that we can't keep up with the need with the EAB we have.
Yes, that's. It's the linkage between the federal low-income housing 4% federal low-income housing tax credit and PABs is obviously causing a lot of strain, as we're looking to do a lot in the region and throughout the state.
Indeed.
I can answer a few things about Metro. I can tell you what I know. I can tell you what I know, but I want before I do that, any questions about Group 7?
When do you think you'll be ready? October being the earliest? Because we have quarterly meetings. We may go to a quarterly approach, and so would you think you'd be coming in by fall?
Yes, October at the latest, as we keep an eye on the federal shutdown. And our own pipeline of work, it may be by June that we will know whether fourth quarter is still realistic or whether we would be off into 2020 in terms of making that request.
Is your agency being starved for cash at the moment because you're not getting your Section 8 dollars?
Not yet. The January and February allocations, or I should say pass-through from the federal government is available to us, so we're still okay. But if it goes into February, we're going to have to dip into reserves. If it goes past February, it could be really challenging. I mean, we're talking about 8,000 households in Multnomah County that rely on that rental subsidy each month. and the landlords.
And who lose their SNAP payments.
And there's a whole bunch of, I mean.
And also, yes. Don't you need debt service payments on some of your bonds?
There are a whole bunch of.
I'm just curious, I'm sure the whole thing is watching this very closely.
Yeah,
from the capital markets perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the landlords, you know, it's not like that money is pure profit. They have all kinds of expenses they need to cover.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is wildly disruptive.
Yes. About Metro, I can't speak to why taxable bonds. I can only say in terms of the process steps and projects. And it's really repeating things that Margaret and Julie have already said and maybe embellishing them a little. So Metro is working with each of the three counties and the four largest cities in the region, so Portland, Hillsborough, Beaverton, Gresham, and thinking of each of those political jurisdictions as really a subrecipient of funds. And each of those cities and counties is currently working on a local implementation strategy that they aim to have done by June or July. And it's really at that point that each of those cities and counties will have sort of authority or blessing for Metro to start putting dollars out on the street. So I'm going to put on my developer hat. It's entirely possible that there are, you know, there's a large, talented community of developers, both for-profit and not-for-profit, who may have projects that are fully designed and fully entitled and are just waiting for Metro dollars. And so there very well may be some who would be ready to go by the end of this year. I think from the things that I see, it's really going to start ramping up in 2020. And to these phase one projects, the housing authorities in each of the jurisdictions have been asked which project would you advance, even before local implementation plans are in effect. So there is a pipeline of early projects that will be coming in perhaps by the end of this year, but I mean the primary or a primary source of funding that's going to be married up with the Metro bonds is going to be 4% tax credits. And so I imagine it will be either through Oregon Housing and Community Services, very likely through Oregon Housing and Community Services, or the housing authorities themselves have the ability to issue private activity bonds. But
they have to come and get an allocation.
Through one means or another, right, there's going to be a significant increase. So that's what you've already heard.
Why I think it's really useful to hear this today, because, again, if Treasurer Reed could be our mouthpiece and we can gather this information across between the Metro, yourselves, you know, Oregon Housing, we can lay out, plus Business Oregon, kind of, it's insane, right? It's insane to have this constraint and either take away the tax exempt thing for the match for 4% tax credits or give us more PAB in states that are growing. Our population is growing, but $105 has been the number for years. It doesn't have any kind of inflation in it. And so it's not, as you said, it's just not buying as much as it used to buy when the 1986 Tax Act went into effect.
Right.
So anyway, so we'll work with you. My guess is that their projects will be in the $20 to $40 million range, mysterious new first projects, just because I feel like that's kind of the numbers we've seen for other projects that are urban.
That's probably
25
right.
to 40-ish. 25 maybe? Okay, so let's guesstimate it's $100 million coming that we don't know about yet, right?
Right. Ours would be bigger. it would be a 200-unit project and asking for I was just doing the quick math back there, roughly $40 million.
Okay, well, I wasn't that off on the 40 side then, was I?
yeah, that's true. And so there's a private activity bond ask, that's right. And I think the whole system has an interest in doing this in an orderly fashion and not running into any unnecessary bottlenecks. And what I'm thinking is I see correspondence going around right now where many of the not-for-profit developers are talking and putting together what they think their list of projects is
They don't need a private activity cap if they to marry it up because they have the ability to sell tax-exempt bonds, correct, Doug?
Well, if they're going to be using any low-income housing tax credits, which I imagine they all expect.
But they have the ability to sell tax-exempt bonds. through Oregon Facilities Authority and others. So
they do, but as pointed out, if they do use tax credits, then there's a for-profit partnership, and so you can't take advantage of the 501c3. There are certain, as you know, there are certain your 501c3 housing bonds that can be done, but if they're leveraging the 4%, then that's what presents.
Okay. Thanks. Any other questions?
Just sort of, again, more generally on Metro, and yes, I understand you don't speak for Metro and you have incomplete information and so forth, but the magnitude of the tax credit leveraging that you sketched out in your own presentation about Home Forward, you know, looks like it's on the order of for every dollar of volume cap you get 50 or 60 cents of tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's apply that same gearing to Metro's $650 million. That's a lot of money left on the table. It's north of $300 million. That's non-trivial. What policy justification can you envision for leaving $300 million on the table?
There's none that immediately comes to mind.
That's kind of my take on it.
Yes. I do know that the modeling they've done relies heavily on the assumption that there will be 4% tax credits in the projects, and that they will be, so they'll be, I think they're assuming that projects will be down here asking for private activity bonds.
Right, but there are two layers of this. If you've got a local issuer who's issuing bonds that require a volume cap, but Metro does not,
mm-hmm.
it's Metro's money left on the table that I'm just amazed that no one's dialed in on that or no one's prepared to advance, other than simplicity and convenience, a policy justification for it. That's notable. I mean, we do have a problem here. Resources, you know, even with upwards of $1 billion in local authority are well short of the requirement as projected, looking at it, you know, a region-wide investment shortfall. I mean, the number is on the order of $7 billion. So why exactly what's the justification for leaving so much money on the table, other than convenience, which isn't much of a justification?
I'll route that back to them.
Yeah. I mean, they need to dial in on this.
Well, they haven't sold yet. The plan's to sell in May, the full amount. So I think there's a few months of public policy conversations, which just make our problems worse if they do decide to do it this other way.
Right, but if you sell in May and sell the whole $600 million,
it's a done deal.
Oof, gone, option destroyed.
Sure enough. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the chance.
Just in the interest of time, we need now to turn to a determination of both carry forward for 18 and volume cap for 19. I want to share, if you'll indulge me both, I've been thinking a lot about this with Martha, brainstorming, talking to the state treasurer about optimal solutions, and also talking with Larry Groth, our deputy director of 29 years. And back long ago, we had shortages in PAB, maybe not since I worked here, but long ago. And at that time, PAB had quarterly meetings and we had quarterly allocations. And I think we need to consider, we have $270 million in current this year, that maybe my first suggestion is that we vote to agree that we need to start a process where we let the world know that we're going to do quarterly, we're going to think about things in the future for quarterly, and that we may decide to override it given certain circumstances, but that in order to make sure that we preserve capacity throughout the year, that we, whether it's at this meeting or at a future meeting, we just lay it out. So dividing 270 by 4, I get 67.5, give or take, million. And the reason I want to do that is that maybe we don't have this crunch of housing projects coming at us now and maybe a future project that Doug mentioned, but just to warn people that there's only going to be a certain amount per quarter. Now, if we don't allocate it in a quarter, we can roll it over to the next quarter so that that 67.5, if it's unused in one quarter, becomes 135, I believe.
but it's a way to be fair with people throughout the year, and that it also requires them people to be ready to go and to sharpen their pencil and to give us good sources and uses and to just in general realize that it's a limited resource. And I'm just wondering how you all feel about it, but I kind of feel that we need to accept this new reality because we're being asked to fund a lot of carry forward, a lot of new, and I think we need to send a signal to the bond finance community that we are going to have to set some additional kind of quarterly limitations. You want to react to my thoughts on that?
I guess I would wonder whether we should do this going forward instead of applying it at this existing meeting because we haven't notified.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that, but I just want to get that kind of as a going forward thought, mm-hmm. is that we need to just let folks know that this is a restraint. And that's why I purposely pushed everybody to kind of tell me what their needs were and what's in their pipelines to the extent we knew. But it will help those housing authorities and nonprofits who might need to come to see us to be thinking and planning too.
Mm-hmm. It's generally the right direction. I think the message needs to be even broader than that, that people need to think about, again, with regard to housing bonds, making increased use of taxable tails so that they make efficient use of what volume cap they've got. I mean, they've obviously got to get enough to get past the 50% test for their tax credits. That's also part of the message. And I think if we're gonna see the big crunch this year, because, again, some of this is...
It's next year, I think.
Is next year, pushing as much discretion into the back half of the year as we reasonably can is probably a good idea.
To the extent we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Understood.
Okay, well, that was the first thing that I ran by the treasurer. And, again, I don't know that it's fair to do it at this meeting because we didn't tell anybody that. But I just think some of my other suggestions based on conversations with him will help clarify. Having heard from Port of Morrow, I'll deal with it first. Based on my conversations with him yesterday, I feel very comfortable that carry forward of the $10 million is a wise idea. They're going to close. But that tail of the last five, which is kind of how I design, you know, ask those questions, I would recommend that we approve the full 15 for Port of Morrow, but we do 10 as carry forward and only five as new allocation with the hope that if they use it, so be it, but that if they don't need the full five, we aren't stuck with some allocation into, you know, perhaps in solid waste, which means that we have to do a $90 million project that we're not sure about yet. And that $90 million project can come and talk to us, and we'd be happy to chat with them, but it'll be in this new resource-constrained environment where they'll have to compete. So that was the first thing that I recommended to the treasurer. The second, and maybe you want to hear all of them before we vote, but we could either vote one by one. But the second thing was that he's really seriously very committed to affordable housing along with the legislature and the governor. And his recommendation that I'm carrying is that we allocate the balance of all the carry forward to Oregon Housing because it's a bank of carry forward from, again, they want to do a small port in a single family, and that's fine. But I think that if anything, he would just say put it all in multifamily so that it can be used by Metro, it can be used by Portland Housing, it can be used by Oregon State Agency, and we give discretion to Margaret and her team going forward. So that would be his second recommendation. And then third, after talking about it, and the reason I talked about the quarterly was I don't see any projects coming in April. And so while I think we should allocate 67.5 per quarter, I'm willing to suggest, and he agreed with me, that we give the full 120 in new allocation to Intel based on the type of project it is, the fact that it's only a portion of the larger project, our largest employer, a very important partner in state's economic development, and recognizing that 67.5 and 67.5 is going to be okay because I don't hear and know about any other things that are coming in April. So rather than just give them some now and then make them come back in April, if you're going to close in March, just go ahead and do it. So that's my three-part proposal based. Again, I carry the treasurer's vote, and so this is what he would like to propose. Thoughts, feedback?
I think the Port of Morrow solution is spot on. with regard to all other carry forward going to Housing and Community Services, again, if this state and if the voters of the Portland metro area are going to kind of engage with this whole issue of leaving a lot of money on the table, you're making it more difficult to do that by taking everything beyond the $75 million request and routing it back to HCS, because then it's not available to Metro. And the way would become available is what you do to address the intel requirement is it becomes a mix of carry forward and current year.
Well, this is true. And our preference is to bank as much into affordable housing right now with what we know. And so we can have a difference of opinion. But, I can't say what Metro wants to do. I can only know what I'm hearing they're planning to do. And given that what they're planning to do, this seemed like the logical solution.
Yeah. Well, again, if we've got senior-level elected officials like the governor and the treasurer who want to do as much for affordable housing as they can, how do you reconcile that with leaving a lot of money on the table?
They're not the Metro commissioners.
And well, of course. I mean, yeah. I don't think so. Either this is a case of don't care or it hasn't been clearly explained to them, and I doubt if it's a case of don't care.
I'll chime in with my input here. I agree on the split on the Port of Morro. I think that makes sense in light of what they've got going on. And I strongly support the Intel $120 million request. I'm sort of indifferent as to what we do with the balance of carry forward to housing, whether we do their $75 million they asked for, whether we do it all. I don't really have a strong opinion on that either way.
Well, I will say the Business of Oregon has said that they'd prefer it because current as well. So just in the worst case scenario, for some reason you can't hit the capital markets because people realize that without a federal budget, things are tough. The capital markets could close up in a few months. So I am also, echoing back what their own agency would prefer. So in light of that, you're still indifferent?
Yeah.
Well, let's vote on the Port of Morro because we all agree about that. So I'll make a recommendation that we do $10 million in carry forward for Port of Morro and $5 million in new allocation. Do I have a second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
I move that we approve the Intel $120 million of 2019 PAB allocation.
I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Yeah, I think we're setting ourselves up for a bigger problem at the end of the year.
You get to vote yay or nay, sir?
No.
Okay. A motion carries 2/3. So what we have left is the balance of 2018 carry forward, which is $114,641,000. And Martha will do the cents that are left on that number.
One half to single family, one half to multifamily.
Well, I think they asked for $35 million in single family and the balance in multifamily.
$37.5 million,
and then the balance, whatever the number balance is, goes to multifamily. I'll make that motion.
So it's not a clean split. It's 37.5
to 10. What we have requested was the $75 million equal split.
Uh-huh.
We have not.
But if you get more, then you said multifamily for the balance.
Yes.
Okay.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. I think congratulations, we've completed. This will be on record since I've been here, the first time we didn't have a unanimous vote on every single thing, and that's okay. But thank you all for being here. If there's any public testimony, if not, we have meetings scheduled in April, July, and October. And if it's all right with the committee, what I'd like to do is just send a letter out to interested parties.
Sure.
About the balance of what we have available. Again, if somebody comes in April, then my whole plan about 67.5% will go out the window. But just to let folks know that we are going to be looking more at a quarterly allocation process as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll give them some advance notice.
Yeah. I'm sure, Dave.
One clarifying question. So we appreciate the decision. Thank you. So just to clarify, so with this $120 million for current year,
yes,
you will have how long to use that?
You'll have 150 days under our current Oregon administrative rules. So that will be in your letter. So if you don't use it,
okay,
you'll have to come back and ask for it again. Sorry, but that's just the way it works. And that's the same thing, and that's why we like current for projects where there's a good chance we'll get done, but we've seen a lot of projects that say they're going to get done that don't get done.
Right.
Thanks.
And
okay.
There is,
thank you very much.
There is allowance for extension.
Sure.
Yeah.
With certain circumstances. So, but I think Intel folks need to know that we're quarterly, and so if you come back this summer, we'll be throwing the ball up in the air and doing jump ball. I think we know we're going to see something in the fall, maybe, from on forward, but we may see several projects as well that we don't even really know about coming out of the whole Metro process. And so that's mostly what I want to get out there. To the extent, Jonathan, you know all the underlying partners, and if you have contacts, or maybe if you guys know it, I'd like to send a letter to all of them just telling them about our meeting today and what our expectations will be going forward. If there's no other business, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you for all your patient time here.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.